Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's...
I know you don't like that word, but there really are. And then, but by and large, it's people who are very satisfied with what they're getting. And so I tend to think that, I hear from people who are watching Wednesdays and are kind of skipping Mondays or speeding through it. So they're out there. But yeah, I can't really point to emails and correspondence with people who are saying they came back to wrestling or they started watching wrestling because of AEW. Now, if they started watching, it may take a while before they start caring about sites like ours. If they're more casual in nature. But yeah, I really do think a lot of it is the same audience, and they're just pleasing their audience more than the other promotions are.
It'd be interesting to put a chart together since October, and there's so many factors too. There's a lot of noise and a lot of world events and seasonal trends that are all baked in that would affect this. But it'd be interesting to combine Raw, Dynamite, NXT, and SmackDown total viewership for each week and see if, well, there's an ebb and flow to certain shows. If while one show loses, there's a tendency of another show to gain at all. I don't have a clear answer to it either. I mean, I threw to you first because I don't feel like I have a decisive answer. I think common sense says, and anecdotally, it's that some people who used to think, I like wrestling, Raw and SmackDown are all the top names are, ROH and Impact out there as weekly shows you could tune into. But I think it's just common sense. So people are like, I'm an AEW guy now. Or, NXT, I used to watch that on the network. Now it's live for 2 hours. I don't need to watch SmackDown anymore. Some of that's going on. I guess I won't punt on Ted's question. I think that Raw and SmackDown dropping is part of a larger trend that even if Dynamite and NXT didn't exist, would still be happening. I think that it's exacerbated by the coronavirus. I think it's down 5 to 10% more because of that. If you track the numbers and look at the trend lines of what you would have predicted in February would be the numbers in April, May, June, and July. It's down 5 to 10% from where you would have projected it based on prior patterns. This has been going on for a while. And I will note, it's three of the top seven shows in the 18 to 49 key adult demographic. Raw was, all 3 hours, were three of the top seven shows on Monday. That's good. Raw used to be far and away number one, two, and three, but they're still among the top shows on Monday nights, which is indicative of people's viewing habits overall changing. And that's just a big story arc right now for pro wrestling 5 years down the line. When we're in the next TV deal, people are unplugging, cutting the cord, subscribing to streaming services off and on. You've got Peacock, HBO Max, Apple TV Plus, all these competing streaming services with top shelf content. And, people are going to their cable box less and less often to their cable channels. And then you have, Sling and YouTube TV and Hulu TV and on as competing sources for USA Network and TNT. But I don't know where that's going to be in 5 years, Jason. And that's why WWE Network has a free tier. And why with NBC doing Peacock Network, maybe, there's a real change in Raw, SmackDown, and NXT in some form or fashion, some or all of them, end up on Peacock. And that's the way that you download the shows on demand or watch them live. Obviously, sports being live, the tendency is to think that they're going to stay on cable, and they're going to be one of the anchors of keeping this cable model in place. But at some point, this cable model might look a lot different. This world changes technologically every generation.
Definitely. And wasn't Amazon in play for WWE content at one time for Raw or SmackDown?
Yep, Amazon Prime, yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, change is afoot. Okay, let's go to our second email. I do want to remind people, if you're joining us, push 1 on your keypad if you want to join the program and join the conversation. Our number, 347-215-8558. I apologize for not announcing this like yesterday to give you everybody a chance to know we were doing this. But if you, it was like less than about 15 minutes notice, we decided to record a mailbag and make it a live caller show. So we got a couple of people on hold. We'll get to you in a moment. And we invite everybody else to join in. I do want to read two emails that came in back to back related to this topic that I think is interesting. These both came in the inbox, not too far apart. Joe G says, come on, Wade. You can't tell me the executives at USA Network like what they are airing for 3 hours on Monday night. And you know what's really sad, Wade? I'm actually looking forward to tonight's episode. It's going to be better. Tonight's Impact episode. It's going to be better than Raw. So then Durrell emails and says, so with all the talk lately about viewership and watching shows during the pandemic, I ran across an article about the pandemic's 10 most popular TV shows, which put a question in my head to ask. This article from a place called Observer.com has Raw as one of the top 10 shows in the United States on among all shows on all platforms, and seeing that they do amazing numbers after live viewership. Is this a reason why NBC never gives them, or why NBC never gave them a hard time, especially since they want to get into the streaming market themselves with Peacock? And should WWE really worry if they know this information, and should they be trying harder to bring their own network higher? Not quite sure I get the last part. They just want money, whether it comes from direct subscribers or Peacock paying them a lump sum. But I clicked on the article published July 24th by Brandon Katz at Observer.com. It's just a general news and entertainment website. SpongeBob SquarePants is number one, Jason. It's the number one show during the pandemic. But Raw's number eight. In between The Flash and Steven Universe and The Walking Dead is apparently number 10.
And let's not forget, those are reruns, Wade.
What is?
I believe most of The Flash.
Yeah.
Walking Dead, they did get some in, but then I remember their season finale was cut. It still hasn't aired because of the pandemic. So I guess maybe there are some first-run shows in there. I'm not sure.
I'll clarify just real quick, Jason.
Sure.
Parrot Analytics, it's a data firm that tracks TV popularity through social media, fan ratings, and piracy to figure out who's watching what. So it takes all those things into account that everybody who says, oh, ratings don't count because this is happening and that's happening, they're trying to capture all that. And they say the 10 most in-demand titles in the United States over the last 60 days, number 8, WWE Raw. By the way, Game of Thrones 3, Stranger Things 4, Avatar 5, Rick and Morty 6, just to fill out some of that top 10.
Okay. Yeah, it's look, I mean, there's still an audience for it. It's a shrinking audience. And so I almost feel like we're playing defender of WWE, kind of, well, you know, we're still this, we're still that. Your show isn't good, by and large, when it comes to Raw and SmackDown, and your numbers continue to drop. Yes, there are reasons, but I mean, they're creating long-term issues. You know, they just keep pushing older talent, and I can't point to any one of them and say, stop pushing this person. But who are these younger talents they're pushing? They just keep making these same mistakes over and over again. I really do worry about them next time that deal comes up. Now, maybe it will be all these streaming services are going to start bidding, and they'll drive the value up. But, I mean, this is I can't imagine Fox is thrilled with the numbers that they're getting. They can talk about the demos all they want, but this has been a disappointment. And just WWE, I think it looked no further than the fan base, the vocal fan base. They want to love these shows, and they don't. You know, they're frustrated, and for good reason.
Yeah, I think what WWE has going for them is the ultimate excuse. And there's a level of validity to it, which is the pandemic changed everything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, live sports have been gone. WWE and AEW are the two organizations that are, you know, running consistently live programming. FS1 scooping up all kinds of, you know, best of content on Tuesday nights. WWE is the cable is desperate for programming. WWE is providing it. They don't know when they look at the viewership. Most network executives and advertising executives don't know whether Raw is good or bad because they're not sitting around watching it. They're not getting the feedback, Jason, that you and I get from live callers, emailers, and just years of following this business and kind of not having an intuition for it, but having an ability to track through social media and your online polls and all that, how people feel. They don't know all that. They're not immersed in that. They just look at the numbers and go, oh, it's three of the top seven shows on cable on Monday night, and we're in a pandemic. They're really valuable right now. And WWE, I think, is leaning on that, and they shouldn't lean too hard on it. You know, they need to be reassessing, and they should do this, you know, pretty regularly. You can't do it every week and survive. You can't reassess your entire business model or creative approach every week. But they should be taking a hard look at where are all these people going and why, and trying to find out and being nimble and open to change. And I just don't know if they're doing that. But to go from one emailer saying USA has to be sad to another showing Raw is still one of the top 10 most in-demand shows during the pandemic shows there's all these there's all this competing information. And then there's people look at these record low ratings and prescribe it to the pandemic. Nobody wants to watch wrestling if there aren't fans in the arena. It's like, yeah, they're off 5 to 10% from where they were headed anyway, based on where, because the ratings weren't great in January and February. You know, they were down, and they always right. they drop after WrestleMania. And if you account for that, they're only down 5 to 10%. So WWE can point at that and say, yeah, we lost some viewership from the pandemic, but I don't think they can point at it and say that's the only reason viewership is down is a pandemic. It was heading down anyway. But then they can also say, and this is why it is back and forth, we're doing fine. We're doing what we've always done. The world hasn't changed. We haven't changed. The problem is people just aren't watching cable like they used to. And then someone can counter and say, yeah, but there's no sports. Shouldn't all those people be watching you instead because they don't have a lot of choices? So you can go back and forth, and it's subjective. You know, it's pick your argument. The bottom line is, it you know, in 3, 4, 5 years, I don't see how WWE turns this trend line around in terms of people tuning in to watch 3 hours of Raw when there's also 4 hours on Wednesday night to choose from and then 2 hours of SmackDown. And not to mention, you know, 100,000 plus people watching Impact on Tuesday nights, 166,000 last week. That chips away a little bit, too, at the potential viewership for all the shows.
Yeah, and going back to that first question about, I mean, this is just during the pandemic. I mean, let's not forget that New Japan is running shows now, but that is, you know, that's a factor. More for the super fan. We have MLW, and, you know, you mentioned Impact, the NWA when they're running, Game Changer Wrestling. I mean, it's just, they're at Ring of Honor. There is too much, I think, right now for even diehard super fans to keep up on fully, not in all cases. And I think it does, you know, it's good for the fans to have all these options, but I do think it whittles away if you're not getting what you want from WWE Raw. That's been your go-to show over the years, and you're not getting what you want. All right, you can go sample some of these other shows, and maybe you get your fix there if you're more of a casual nature. So, you know, they do have that working against them. On the flip side, I mean, I don't know, Wade, about you, but I'm guessing they won't have to worry about Monday Night Football as competition for more than a couple of weeks this year, if even that. I hate to say it. I mean, yeah. I love the NFL, but I just don't see how in the world this is going to work out for them until there's a vaccine.
Yeah, baseball is it's too bad that baseball was the first major sport to get up and running, because they're the ones who have looked to be the loosest of the standards, and I haven't immersed myself in it, so correct me if you think I'm wrong on that, Jason, but it seemed like the NBA and NHL creating kind of, you know, bubble cities for their players to live in. Baseball didn't, you know, they're traveling to stadiums and buildings and hanging out in an indoor clubhouse, which hopefully the NBA and NHL learn is a bad idea. And there should be, you know, it's going to be tough in the winter, but in the summer, there should be outdoor clubhouses for them to shower and change in with fresh air flowing through them. They shouldn't be trapped in clubhouses, because that's, you know, it's in small spaces with lots of people where this spreads the most. If the NFL can't figure out how to do this more safely than what's happened with the Marlins already, it's going to be a lonely fall and winter for sports fans.
Yeah, I don't see how it can happen. I mean, you're looking at 100 people probably minimum per team when it comes to, you know, roughly 60 players if you're counting practice squad guys that are going to be there and all that, and then your training staff, your coaching staff, all of that, and just to. You know, if it'd be different maybe if it was a biodome type setup, like you're saying, with the NBA especially. Yeah. But when you're looking at, you know, no, we're just going to send everybody home, even if every single player in the league, which is unrealistic to think, were super careful and did all the right things, well, they have family. And, it, I mean, it's just realistically, this isn't happening.
Yeah, the idea of isolating football players for 4 months or 5 months from their families is unrealistic. You know, I mean, you maybe can assemble a league that would be half like the strike season, you know, half players who aren't NFL caliber, half who don't have family or just don't want to be around their family. And certainly there's some who feel that way. And they isolate themselves in some bio bubble. But the idea that and it's frustrating too, because, you know, just about every other civilized country figured this out. You wear masks all the time when you're indoors, and you wear a mask when you're in close quarters with people, and we can get it down to a small enough number of transmissions that we can trace, contact trace, and figure this out. And yet you're watching baseball and there's players hanging out not wearing their mask in the dugout for hours at a time with other people. God knows what's going on in the locker rooms, and God knows what's going on when they go home to their families, who probably had a three-hour barbecue in close proximity to a bunch of neighbors who have been traveling on airplanes. I mean, it's just, we just can't figure out that we can get this thing over with. It's going to be painful, but we can get it over with if we do the right thing. And it looks like we're going to be the last country to figure that out.
Okay, speaking of masks, did you notice last night that on a taped show, I mean, it's bad enough that the spectator wrestlers are doing this.
Yeah.
I think it's even worse that WWE is so oblivious that they don't edit their fan footage, their spectator wrestler footage. They open up two wrestlers with the masks below their noses. Later in the show, during the women's title match, they show a woman behind the plexiglass pulling her mask down to yell and then pulling it back. Like, what are you guys thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get it. All right. We had two people on hold. We lost one of them. Sorry we didn't get you right away. We'll try to be better about that.
They can go to hell.
let's go to our one caller who's waiting to talk to us on our super short notice live cast. 612, give us a call back if you're still listening, a local call.
Oh, no, it's local. Never, I take it back. They might be able to find me.
That's true. Yeah, you got to be careful. 609, thanks for calling. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, how you guys doing? It's Joe here from Atlantic City.
Hey, Joe, good to hear from you. Yeah, so I was going to say, what did you think of whatever TV show I usually do the post show on, but we're not doing that. So what's in your mind today?
Well, you know, I wanted to reference two quick things with the recent news that happened in the weeks approaching the Slammiversary, where it looked like the Good Brothers were really exposing some behind-the-scene happenings with Paul Heyman, some of the ways he was operating the Raw team. And to piggyback off of that was the apparent burial of Ricochet and Aleister Black in mid-push. And one last thing that the spawn off of the Paul Heyman comments there, were the Bruce Pritchard recently having sort of a back and forth with Nick Aldis, where it seems like he took a shot at him, stating that he wasn't really performing as the character, but what he felt the character should be. And is that subsequent to what we're going to see with a Bruce Pritchard running both shows? I know in the past he had mixed results, where some were great, some weren't, but it always seemed like when he was primary, things didn't turn out well.
Yeah, interesting. Jason, I know when you were originally reported on the Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson comments, in your comment section, you kind of try to balance things out a little bit in terms of, you know, what might be going on. What is your take? What is your information on and your reaction to how they framed how Paul Heyman handled their push and their characterization of what he was doing up to his old games?
Yeah. So I kind of took it as he's telling them maybe what they want to hear as far as their pushes are concerned. When it came to the idea that Heyman was behind them being fired, he may have had them on the list. I don't know. I assume so, based on the way they kind of told the story. But I mean, to me, it's crazy that Vince McMahon can babyface his way out of this, that it's Heyman's fault, basically. Because Vince, come on, he has the final say here. And so I'm kind of surprised that Heyman was essentially thrown under the bus. Like, it wasn't me, it was Paul. Like, that wasn't part of Heyman's responsibilities, to the best of my knowledge, to hire and fire, recommend, I'm sure. And hey, look, you know, I mean, we can talk about whether it's right that WWE is the only company so far in the wrestling industry, that, you know, major company that has laid people off during a pandemic. But from a sheer business standpoint, those guys were being paid an awful lot of money to be henchmen. And it's too bad. I think we're seeing now, it's been an eye-opening week for me, just seeing them on Slammiversary, seeing them on last week's Impact, that, oh, that's right, these guys can be fun. But they weren't in WWE, and they weren't getting anything out of them. And so I think Heyman and Vince deserve blame for that part of it. But when it comes to getting rid of them, I'm sorry, but the buck stops with Vince. And so I guess they've just never quite convinced me that this is all evil Paul Heyman's fault.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's always two sides to a story. Sometimes neither of them even closely resemble the truth. Sometimes somebody is 99% accurate. I mean, so when I say two sides, I mean two equally valid sides. But I don't know what the politics were. I know what they said. I know what I've heard about Haman specifically this round, which was it wasn't particularly – there wasn't a lot of drama with Paul and Vince McMahon. And he just, you know, kind of went about his business. And I think you're right, Jason, that to blame Paul Heyman for saying he was their booster and then suspecting he wasn't is fine. But to frame it as Paul told us something, he promised us something that we know he can't promise us, and we believed him. And then we got mad when something else happened, when the world circumstances changed. Yeah, I just don't know. But I also agree with you. I think, you know, what we saw with Eddie Kingston last week on Dynamite too, it's so refreshing when people just go out there and actually get to just be who they are.
Sure.
Instead of reciting lines that fit the narrow scope of how the company wants everyone to sound. And I'm a fan of the WWE in-ring style, but it reminds me how much more wrestling can be. Sometimes I don't like it as much, but it can be so many different things than the WWE style. When you see some wrestlers who were in WWE, then leave WWE and go work outside of the confines of that style. And again, it has pros and cons. And I think there's things WWE does in their presentation that makes sense. And there's things that they do that I think they've overdone and should reevaluate. But that's also true on promos. I don't know. I mean, I'll go back to Joe, just in case we didn't fully cover your question.
No, I think the question was covered there. I was just the Bruce Prichard part with Nick Aldis, that back and forth,
right.
And you know, how you think going forward it's really going to look under his regime.
You know, I know Bruce Prichard was given that title, Jason. I mean, I hear he's not like the creative guy in the company. You know, it's to say that Prichard replaced Heyman, I don't think it's fair, because Bruce Prichard or Paul Heyman was the creative director, who was also very hands-on in the details of the program. And I mean, it's Raw now it's more Ed Koski, Ryan Ward, Jen Peppermint. I mean, it's like they have a writing team that was there and is still there. And I think Bruce is there to tell Vince, yes, good idea, or, mm-hmm. you know, finesse things a different way. But what happened is, it was Paul Heyman doing his thing, and in order to do his thing, Vince knew he had to give him some leeway to do to actually not just be a yes man. And I think Vince got to a point where he needed a fall guy, and then he needed a replacement, and so we went with Bruce Prichard. But Bruce is not doing what Paul Heyman did. Bruce is doing what Bruce does. And so it's not a substitution for Heyman, and I think all that's happened is we have a situation where the writers who were under Paul are now taking on more responsibility, and Bruce Prichard is doing what he was doing before, which is probably second-guessing Paul and confirming Vince McMahon when Vince was second-guessing Paul.
Yeah, and nodding along when Vince clearly wants to push older wrestlers at the expense of younger wrestlers. And again,
yeah,
there's,
yeah.
You know, I can't point to anybody and just be like, oh, they shouldn't be pushing this person. I really don't have that issue when I watch Raw. It just, they need to be including some fresh faces in there. They need to be doing more with Aleister Black in particular than having him just suffer some injury every week and hero worship Rey Mysterio for reasons they've never explained. You know, there's some real creative issues there. But with Prichard, I guess the track record is basically when he kind of reaches the peak of whatever department he's in, which he's done this time, there tends to be some self-destruction. Hopefully he's an older and wiser Bruce Prichard, and that is not going to happen. I'm certainly not going to wish that on the man. When it comes to the Aldis thing, I haven't followed it closely. I still haven't had a chance to listen to what Prichard actually said. And that's important to state, because there may be something in his wording that would change my mind. But my basic understanding of it is that he wasn't a fan of Nick Aldis when he was Magnus in TNA. And that led to...
When Prichard was there, too.
Yes, when both of them were there. And I don't know what led to the opinion... or the take that nothing has changed. And so that's where I want to hear kind of the wording of it. And maybe the caller can help with that. But, you know, I think what Aldis is saying is fair. I think Nick Aldis has done terrific work outside of TNA, and he did some good work there too. Near the end, like his title reign was disappointing through no fault of his own, in my opinion, was the booking. But since he's been NWA champion and the match with, you know, the matches with Cody and just the promos on Power, he's really upped his game. And so if all of this is basically Pritchard didn't like his work in TNA, well, who cares? So be it. But I also get Aldis's point that he's kind of being devalued by this guy who isn't paying attention to his current work, given his position in WWE.
Said he wasn't paying attention back when he was in TNA also.
Well, you know, I talked to somebody today who kind of echoed that sentiment, who worked with Bruce during. He always wanted to know what people thought about what was happening on Raw while he was the head of Impact Creative, essentially.
Yeah. So from a credibility standpoint, I didn't follow it super closely, but I can speak to it a little bit, Joe. I think that Nick Aldis wanted to make sure that what Nick was saying is, look at what I've done the last couple of years. And
yeah.
He says, everybody will tell you I'm more mature. I'm presenting myself as kind of an old school world champion character. It is very different than what he was. I mean, it's still Nick Aldis, and I was high on Magnus. What was it? What was his Brutus Magnus? Like, I thought, hey, this guy has potential. But you know, like Drew McIntyre talked about, you know, sometimes you're on a journey as a wrestler to land somewhere. And Nick Aldis has landed somewhere, and it's just been a treat to watch him this, you know, on NWA Power. I mean, it's a throwback, but it's also timeless. And he's right to say, I'm doing good work. So Bruce Pritchard has opinions on a lot of things, and he doesn't always qualify his opinions my recollection on this isn't great, or I remember it clearly. Like, it's just, he pushes forward, and this is with the same kind of confidence and bravado and opinion. And it makes for an entertaining person to listen to on podcast, but not a historically accurate, reliable chronicler, someone chronicling history or his role in it. And I would say that this Nick Aldis thing exposes that a little bit.
It's a little disheartening that, hey, I'm sure he's very busy with his current responsibilities, but it is a little disheartening that a guy in his position hasn't paid apparently any attention to what Aldis did in the NWA. I mean, you know, I don't expect him to watch every episode, but just to, when there's buzz about somebody, you'd think, hey, I got to check this out and see what's happening. And it doesn't seem like that's something that he's done.
No, it doesn't. Joe, anything else you want to bring up on this?
No, I do appreciate that. And I guess just the last thing with that Aldis and Bruce Pritchard comment, is that similar to the abrupt fallout he had with Court Bauer and MLW? They had a difference in philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Pritchard was there, then he wasn't, and I don't know the specifics of what actually led to the split. I'm just not sure. I can certainly ask around, and maybe even by the time you and I reconvene on Thursday, I might be able to find out some answers on that.
Sure, yep. Yeah, I don't know enough to speak on it at this time either, Joe. Joe, appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Yep, you bet. All right, our number is 347-215-8558. You can also email us as the show progresses here. We've got about 20 more minutes, give or take, that we open window here to take some emails and calls. Somebody did just email while we've been talking about ratings, George from Bristol, England. He says, Wade and Jason, do you think if NXT was not available on WWE Network until a week after the show aired in the U.S., the key demo rating would increase significantly. Is it just the fact that NXT is available ad-free on the network so soon, 24 hours later, that it likely pulls a lot of people who watch Dynamite, it causes people to watch Dynamite live and then watch NXT on the network 24 hours later? And he says, keep it good work. Thanks, George. Yeah. My inclination is to think that it would skew a little more young, in terms of who NXT loses because of the option to watch it on the network the next day, you know, because young people are more likely to stream than older people. Although I think older people are, you know, catching up on Netflix binging and stuff, thanks to kids and grandkids and such. So possibly, but the discrepancy in the demographic is so great. And NXT people can DVR. If you're watching NXT, or I'm sorry, if you're watching Dynamite on Wednesday nights and you're in the 18 to 34 demo, you probably have the ability to DVR NXT and just watch it, you know, later or the next day without having to rely on the WWE network. So I would think that the such stronger demographics for AEW really is prescribed. You would prescribe that to attribute it to a product that appeals more to the younger demo, not a, I would say maybe more than a sliver, but a really small slice of people who are like, well, I can watch it tomorrow. I can watch NXT tomorrow. I'm 18 to 34. I'm going to watch Dynamite tonight and NXT tomorrow. And also, what does that say about what does that say about NXT that they're willing to wait a whole day to watch it on delay? Even that is indicative of something when, again, people could DVR Dynamite and watch it on delay. So, Jason, I don't know. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a little bit of that, but I don't think it's a huge factor that people are, you know, just waiting until the next night to watch it. I think what AEW is to people, to a lot of people, to the younger fan, is it's their product. You know, I mean, we see it every generation wants their own thing, and whether it's, you know, music, clothing, whatever, and there's some flashback in there too, don't get me wrong, but in this case, this is a chance for a younger generation to have their own wrestling. And even though NXT was basically playing to a similar audience at one time, well, there's still that WWE product that dad watched or my older brother watched, where AEW is fresh and it's new. And I think they're latching on for that reason. This is, you know, they get a chance to go ground level with a new product that they can call their own. I think that is kind of that appeal is underestimated a little bit by people.
Yeah. I mean, the demographic difference isn't that great between AEW and Raw among young males, and it's actually not that different among young females either. AEW is just a cool, hipper, newer, less damaged, less corporate product. I mean, it, you know, like last night on Raw, there was a 12-second span where the word opportunity was used three times. You know, or maybe that was that NXT? I don't know. Whatever. Like the buzzwords. I mean, I get this. Yeah, yes. I get, you know, Vincent Mann going, you know, like Tony Schiavone was, and Tony's great. But like, if you listen back to WCW, I remember Paul Heyman once telling me this, like circa 1993 or something. Like, Tony Schiavone shouldn't call wrestlers guys. These aren't guys. These are athletes. These are pro wrestlers. These are fighters. They didn't say superstars, but, you know, don't say guys. You know, like, don't say folks. These are, you want to prop them up with your language. And I get that. I think Tony goes the other extreme a little bit. Like, and I get, you know, not referring by default to a championship title belt as a strap. It sounds a little too, you know, casual and clubhouse and stuff. But then Vince has gone so far in the other direction that you just crave some casual talk that isn't so precise and corporate.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly it's too bad he chose to marry himself to the term sports entertainer and sports entertainment, because that's just grating on the ears and it's awful. And then the overuse of WWE Universe. When I interviewed Tony Khan last year, the day before Dynamite debuted on TNT, I threw at him, you know, well, what do you think of, you know, the terminology? And I threw out WWE Universe, and Tony's like, I don't mind that. That's sort of like Marvel and stuff. I don't know if Tony watched every hour of Raw and SmackDown and NXT, how he'd feel about how often that term is used and how clunky and unnatural it is when a rebellious heel wrestler makes sure he gets the right terminology in his enraged promo. That's the problem. People don't naturally avoid saying fans and crowd in a conversational way. And so AEW is refreshing in that way. It just feels more grounded, more real. And a big topic on yesterday's Wade Keller Post Show, more unpredictable. And people crave that. Nitro had that. And so I'd like AEW to be a little more brash than they are in certain ways, and a little more defining of their brand overtly. But I think the young male demo especially has picked up on what their contrast is compared to Raw and SmackDown especially.
Yeah, and with NXT, boy, it's a really well-booked, logical product. But with that comes some semblance of predictability if you've been watching long enough. I do think that AEW feeling less predictable because they don't have years of booking patterns that we can look back on and go, oh, they're probably going to do this. You know, this is still new, and we just don't know what necessarily. I mean, we're always going to be able to predict some things, but other times there are times where they surprise you, and not, you know, wrestlers showing up surprised, but actually surprises in the booking. Where NXT, even, which I think again is a really well booked product, I just it's rare that I feel truly surprised by something.
Yep, And surprise for the sake of surprise is not something I advocate. Like,
no,
sometimes
of course not.
Best thing you want to do is what's predictable. RKO out of nowhere. Okay, it's, you know, we kind of saw it coming. The problem isn't there was an RKO out of nowhere. The problem is they didn't book Drew McIntyre to look like he was conscious of what all the fans were thinking. So
right.
You can be predictable, but you want the babyface to be smart enough to see it coming, and then the heel can be cunning enough to outmaneuver the babyface, even if the babyface is prepared for it. So yeah, sometimes it just it's more about the nuance of the moment. Okay, let's jump to another email here. Oh, that's the wrong one that I want to read. Here we go. Zach in Texas. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around what happened last night on Raw and how incredibly short-sighted and stupid it seemed. Putting the title on Sasha Banks throws both divisions into utter chaos and creates so many questions. Who's Sasha? Are they going to job to Sasha at SummerSlam? Who's losing to Bayley? She's run through nearly every woman on the SmackDown roster. That's why it made sense for her and Sasha to split. Did Shayna Baszler just watch any chance she had at the Raw Women's title go up in smoke? And then there's that Asuka. What's left for her now that another title run has been cut short to put over a well-established star? Kyrie's the smartest person in the story. She took her parasol and got the hell out of Dodge. What a mess. I'm glad Kyrie's alive because Asuka's reaction made it seem like, you know, she had died. she got some very bad news. But nevertheless, yeah. I mean, are we headed towards Sasha as a heel against Asuka, who deserves a rematch given how she lost? And are we looking at maybe Nikki becoming champion and then Bayley getting it back at SummerSlam? Or what else can be in the mix with just, you know, over 3 weeks ago to SummerSlam?
The almighty Stephanie McMahon booking Sasha and Bayley against one another, maybe for both titles, or maybe you create one individual women's championship. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that did kind of pop into my head after seeing her show up on television and those two continuing to bash her. I just wonder if that's what it's going to take. You know, it's the mastermind Stephanie that causes the breakup between these two.
You know, we talked about Bruce Pritchard talking about things that he hasn't watched with a little more certitude and confidence than a humble person who isn't watching someone who's commenting on him ought to. how much do you think that Stephanie had any idea what she was talking about when she read that statement on the monitor?
Ooh, good question.
Because it made her look bad.
Yeah, I doubt she's paying close attention. I mean, like most people, like she probably doesn't want to watch this product right now. So, I mean, hey, Sasha and Bayley are doing solid work and all. They're so overexposed. I don't need to see them between 2 and 4 nights a week. I don't need to see anyone 2 to 4 nights a week. I mean, that's why we have a brand split. And this isn't so great that they just, you know, this isn't Stone Cold and we need to get them all over television. It's just not that. They're going overboard with this. And if it's not those two against one another, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like the way every time I assume, all right, this must be the breakup angle, they kind of surprise you there by stretching it out longer. But I'm not even seeing signs. Like, there's nothing endearing about Sasha Banks where if she's going to be the babyface in this, they're planting seeds. Yeah, there's no hints of it coming. So maybe they are going to continue with this. And yeah, I don't know if it would be, it could be Nikki. I don't know what they're doing with Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler now, two heels that are going at it for no real good reason. I just figured, okay, they're going to have a number one contenders match, and it'll probably end in a DQ, and we'll get a triple threat at SummerSlam. But that was when I assumed Asuka was getting retained. So, yeah, I don't know what they're doing there. And so some of that is okay that you don't know, you know, a little unpredictability, but I do admit that I kind of fear where it's going.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to rush into a Sasha Banks, a Sasha Bayley breakup. And I think that's probably more something they'll do at WrestleMania, in part because, like you said, they're overexposed, but that is a symptom of Vince McMahon being high on them. when someone's overexposed, means Vince is high on them. And so I think he's high on them as an act playing off of each other. And I think there's a long journey that they can tell, but it seems like they have, you know, even was it, Michael Cole, I'm trying to think of which announcer. Was it Michael Cole who apologized on SmackDown last week?
Yes.
I thought you guys weren't friends and getting along, but looks like you guys are. I was wrong. So I don't think Cole would say that unless they were, you know, really moving away from that as a thing. So as a storyline, I think they're delaying the breakup now, and I think they're all happy because they have all the belts. And I think I'm intrigued by a story of Sasha being champion and Bayley not. and having that play out for a couple of months and seeing how Bayley responds as the jealous friend who used to be the champion who would put Sasha in bad situations. Now Sasha turns the tables on Bayley. I think that's a story that they are intrigued by and that we'll see play out in September and October.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not as intrigued by it. Just again, I'm kind of they have good matches. It's just we're seeing too much of them. It's just hard for me to be excited about much of anything that they're involved in because it's just at some point it becomes repetitive as well. Like, you know, it feels like we've seen Asuka and Sasha more than we probably actually have, just because you know, they're all over television and and the Asuka thing. I mean, I know some people dig it. Wait, are you at all getting bored with her yelling in Japanese all the time? It's just kind of repetitive.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of repetitiveness on WWE TV with characters, and
that's true.
Todd Martin on The Fix last week, just kind of in the middle of reviewing the WWE TV, just kind of went and did some research on how many times certain wrestlers had faced just one or two or three other wrestlers who are, you know, part of the same kind of faction or circle. It's like, what was the old Google Plus? You had like your circles of college friends,
yeah.
You had your circle of high school friends, you had your family, and you could like post to any circle and people could overlap. Or like this WWE, it's impenetrable. Like you are like the Asuka's fighting the same people all the time.
Right.
Aleister Black just only fights one or two people over and over. So, and on and on. And so, yeah, I mean, the idea is you want hit refresh on the feuds more often, but that's been an ongoing thing with Vince. I mean, how long did Cena and Orton, how often did Cena and Orton fight? I remember the Cena Edge feud going, is this thing ever going to end? JBL, every JBL feud seemed to go on 2 months longer than I
Christian
thought it possibly
and
could.
Randy Orton.
What's that?
Christian and Randy Orton.
Yes.
It just wouldn't end.
Yes. So this isn't a new thing. And they're not just delaying doing things because of the pandemic. I think now they're as much in denial as Vince McMahon of anyone out there with his political persuasion and who he listens to and all that. He's probably one of the last people to come to the realization this isn't going away. You know, they had talked about, you know, SummerSlam maybe having a live audience. They might even move it to September if that was the timeline it took to have a live audience. Now they're all in with August, is it 23rd? I think August 23rd.
Yes.
It's on the website. They're saying, you know, SummerSlam 3 weeks away. But they were holding out on that until after Horror Show. And now they're resigned. They haven't, by the way, have you heard anything about a potential location other than the PC?
No, I mean, it's just they haven't announced it. And so it does seem like they're looking at options to do either outdoor, cruise ship, you know, just something unique, which, you know, I'm all for. I can't
handle. You know what's
available,
Jason? By then, almost every baseball stadium.
Pretty much. Certainly the football stadiums. As long as I don't have to look at that effing ceiling fan, I will be thrilled.
Yes. By the way, I've talked to other people about this. What from watching baseball and even the NBA, you know, with their what do they keep airing over and over again on ESPN, the arena special? What do you think of the way sports has been presented? And is there anything pro wrestling should look at and go, oh, why didn't we think of that? Or, oh, that's a good idea. Or that's working.
So I limited my viewing of baseball to like 5 minutes of the virtual fans. It was a hook that drew me in to watch. They did that for the Fox game, the virtual fans. And it also sent me away within 5 minutes. But I, admittedly, I'm that type of fan. With football, I can watch pretty much any two teams in the NFL. With baseball, it's got to be the Twins, or I just kind of lose interest. Maybe playoffs is different. So I kind of limited myself to watching the Twins over the weekend. I can't tell you that I saw anything that made me feel like, oh, they need to do this in wrestling. And I think some people would point to the background noise. And it works for baseball because there's just kind of that light chatter you hear in the background. It's a slow game. And you know, and then they were good about not going crazy with, you know, super loud volume for base hits. That was one of the issues I saw on Fox. There'd be, or I think it was a preseason game, even exhibition game, where there'd be a hit. And all of a sudden you go from that quiet noise into just over the top cheering. It's like, that's not how it sounds. So I think less is more is what I've, from what I've gathered. You know, the White Sox sold, I think it was a charity thing. They had a lot of cardboard cutouts filling the seats. I wouldn't recommend that for wrestling, but I thought it was fine for baseball, especially once I found out it was for charities. Like, yeah, that's cool. No problem with that. Even though, admittedly, I kept waiting for – I was disappointed that with the new netting, I wanted to see a foul ball just tear the heads off one of those cardboard cutouts.
Without the netting, yeah. I want the Mystery Science 3000 robots to show up and just sit in the crowd.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Like, and just, you know, tune into baseball to see who's in the crowd. You can, it can be CGI, Jar Jar Binks and all his family and friends. They could all be there.
Let's not kill baseball, too.
I know.
So let's make it R2 and C-3PO.
There we go. Yeah. All right. Let's jump to another email here. Let's see. Tim in Virginia Beach, VIP member. Thank you, Tim. Says, with Big E now being set up for what looks like a major singles run, would either of you be interested in seeing him in a potential program versus Brock Lesnar as a continuation of Kofi Kingston's humiliating storyline dating back to the summer SmackDown premiere? Or do you feel this would be a bit too on the nose if, say, Big E and Lesnar confronted each other at next year's Mania? Thanks for taking my questions. Best wishes to you and yours during these trying times. Jason, your thoughts on what's in store for Big E with a singles push?
Well, I'm guessing it's going to be more IC title based. Maybe they'll kind of wait to do it post SummerSlam, and then they can put him in the world title picture. But I could certainly see AJ and Big E at some point. You know, the reason I don't think we're going to get Big E in the title picture before then is obvious with The Fiend and Strowman all but announced for SummerSlam. So I'm not sure where Big E fits in. The idea of him going against Lesnar is fine. You could make that part of the, you know, I wouldn't mind if they brought that up. Maybe even Heyman gloating about what Lesnar did to his buddy, but I wouldn't make that like the center of the storyline. It's going to make, why isn't Kofi just fighting his own battles? Even if he is still sidelined, it's just kind of like, well, this is kind of cheesy. So I would kind of resist that, but I'd love to see a match between Big E and Brock. I think it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when we look ahead to WrestleMania next year and this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter online for VIP members in PDF and alt text format, I did dare to jump ahead and look at what WrestleMania options appear to be here. Because August, November, October, November, December, January. By, you know, in 6 months, it's going to be pretty clear what the pieces are that they have to work with. We're going to have a Rumble winner, a couple Rumble winners, and, you know, whether WrestleMania is the first big event with a crowd, full crowd, no masks, no social spacing, because it works out that somehow everyone's agreed to take the vaccine and everything is safe and we get the green light, or it's at the Performance Center or fought in an underwater swamp, whatever it is, what options do they have? And by that point, if we're looking that far ahead, Big E might not be on SmackDown. Drew McIntyre might not be on Raw. I mean, who knows? So it really is a whole roster to choose from. So I put it out there as early on, yes, Big E challenging AJ Styles for the IC title at SummerSlam. That might happen. If Big E wins, does he just stay at that level? But what if Big E actually moves up another level and then we have a superstar shakeup in late September, early October, whenever they decide. It doesn't have to be the first week of October like last year. That was coinciding with debuting on Fox.
Right.
But if they do it again, then you have your whole selection of the whole roster. And so I wrote about some possibilities with Big E that intrigued me. What jumps out to you, Jason, as matches, if you were to get the most out of Big E as a singles wrestler?
Oh, man. I wouldn't mind seeing him work Strowman. I think that would actually be an intriguing matchup. I think we'd see quickly that Braun's a lot bigger than Big E, but I think we've seen him maybe in a Rumble match together or something. And, you know, I think even though the height difference is there, I think Big E has credibility. You know, he may not be a 6'7" monster, but I think he has that credibility is just as far as his in-ring style is concerned. So that would be fun. I think, you know, he and AJ again would have a really fun match. Gosh, I'm trying to think of on the Raw side. Heck, Seth Rollins, I guess kind of the usual suspects because they haven't really, you know, they're afraid to build anyone else up, and Big E's kind of an exception. So, yeah, I guess there's not, I can't really point to people and go, ooh, don't put him against this guy. I really don't have that issue going on with him at all.
Yeah, yeah. So I like Big E getting a push. I think the time is right, and we've been talking about it for a long time. I think Big E's got to be a serious version of Big E with a hint of, you know, he's still the playful goof, but you want him to be more serious. And I mean, I think you can do Big E versus Bray. I think you do Big E versus AJ, which seems most likely on the horizon. But you can do Big E against Seth after a superstar shakeup, Big E against a heel Randy Orton. I don't think Big E, like, I think what you have to be careful of with Big E is putting him against anybody who's perceived as sort of an upper mid carder, a Dolph Ziggler type, someone who visits the main events, but they're often not main event, because I think that'll pull Big E down. I think that's where, you know, Braun or Bray or, you know, Bobby Lashley could work. He's getting enough of a push. You know, I'm trying to stay with heels because I think Big E would stay face, but, you know, I guess there's a possibility of Big E going heel and disappointing Kofi and Xavier, and they turn that into some sort of storyline too. You know, part of that is Big E itching creatively to do something different, because I want him to want this. You know, you can tell Randy Orton's into it right now. Edge was into his return. You want people who are into what they're doing. You know, Drew McIntyre has been plugged in, and you can just tell he shows up and he's all business and wants to make the best of the circumstances. And sometimes other wrestlers, you can tell, you know, their mind's not always on it. So I want to see an inspired Big E, in other words, doing his thing. Okay, so Jason, we're going to be back on Thursday with the regular flagship. We're going to cover, you know, all the big topics, including what comes out of NXT and AEW tomorrow night. To wrap up as a teaser for it, who's doing a better job right now setting you up to be excited for August and September? At NXT, for what they're doing to build up NXT TakeOver 30 and building up for the fall season, or AEW and what they're doing to set up the All-In show and going into the fall season?
I think presently I have to give the nod to NXT, but only because they've really they started the hype, where I don't feel like AEW – I think there's some storyline build taking place. But, for instance, I don't know who Jon Moxley's facing. I don't know who Cody's going to face. So it's just a matter of kind of announcing those things or to start telling those stories that build to All Out. Whereas NXT, I mean, it's not official, but it certainly looks like we're getting – Karrion Kross and Keith Lee for the championship. We know we're getting a ladder match. Overall, just in general, I mean, I'm enjoying the week to week in AEW slightly more than NXT. But yeah, I mean, it's just as far as building to the big summer shows, NXT has the advantage, but it's almost by default.
Yep. All right. Very good. So we'll reconvene on Thursday right here on the Blue Brand for the flagship. We'll get more into the prospects of Dolph and Orton and the SummerSlam lineup taking shape. That's a cover story in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. It's just looking at that taking shape. And certainly there'll be some more news that's broken between now and then. And we might even have the AEW NXT ratings with AEW for two straight weeks pulling ahead, not just in demos, but in total audience. And they'll, I think, be aiming to make it 3 weeks this week in NXT, trying to counter that. So we'll see how that turns out. Jason, thanks for joining me on short notice here. Thanks to everybody who is downloading and listening to our show. Thanks to Joe for calling us up on short notice and our emailers. Jason, tell people about your website and how they can follow you on social media and how they can get your free podcast every week.
Yeah, and thanks for nothing, 612, since you never called back. You can follow me at prowrestling.net, of course, is the website. The Twitter handle is @prowrestlingnet. Just leave the dot out of that one. And prowrestling.net, we're just covering the news of the day all day long, and then live reviews of the major television shows and pay-per-views. If you want to take things a step further, there is the ad-free version of prowrestling.net, our members section, which comes with just a ton of audio content. Same-night audio reviews of most of the major shows, certainly all the major pay-per-views. And for information on that, simply visit pwmembership.net. And again, if you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter @prowrestlingnet.
Jason, do you want to take one more call or do you got to run? I know you had a small window.
You know what? Go for it.
Okay. Well, 615, you are up next. You're the last caller of the day. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys, I'm glad I got in. Sean, VFP from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. How y'all doing?
Doing good, Sean. Yeah, glad you were able to call us here late in the show. So what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to get I talked to you last night, but I wanted to get Jason's viewpoint on the Asuka-Sasha match last night as far as, you know, we were talking about, you know, the ending. And, Jason, I know I've talked to you before about, obviously, the Extreme Rules ending, but, I wish they'd stop doing – you know, these crazy endings of the, you know, why can't they just, you know, why can't they have a match that's a great match with a, you know, you can do a heel thing, a heel tactic, you know, behind the referee's back or something, but the crazy finish, I just didn't like, you know, with Asuka being distracted and all that. You know, what'd you think about that, first of all? Because I didn't like it at all.
I liked it by and large. The one thing I didn't like was that Sasha was just out of it. And it's like, well, just put on the Oscar lock for 2 seconds, rep checks, or you win, and then run to the back. Other than that, though, I guess the thing that I appreciated about it was that the stipulation where the title can change on, you know, a count out, DQ, whatever, it did make me think, oh, this must be the time where Bayley does something that costs Sasha this match, and the title goes back to Asuka that way. And so I guess I was kind of tuned in that way. And when it went the other way, where Asuka lost the championship the way she did, I thought it was kind of clever, you know, and so I, but if you were kind of going into it not thinking that Asuka was going to, or that Bayley was going to turn on Sasha, I could totally see how it wouldn't work for you.
Yeah.
Sean, you got my thoughts last night.
Yeah. Right, exactly. But here's a question I have for both of you guys. I talked to Jason on one of his shows about, and Wade, I wanted to get your thoughts because I hadn't talked to you about this much, is, I really, again, I'm excited Impact put the Knockouts title in Deonna. I really think, you know, WWE missed the ball so bad on her. I think she's just, again, so talented, so good in the ring. So I'm glad they did that. Like, first, I wanted to ask you guys if you guys knew anything about her contract status, if she has signed, or what do you think she will officially sign with them? I would assume she would since she's got the title, but I just was kind of curious about that. And then, Wade, like, where do you, or both of you guys, how long do you think that they should keep the title on her? I think they should keep the title on her for quite a while because, again, I think she's better as a babyface, but I like where they're going with her as a heel. So what do you guys think about that?
Go ahead, Jason, first.
Sure. So I don't know officially whether she signed or not. And if she does, then I'm with you. I think she is a strong champion. I think they've done a really good job of establishing her right out of the gate. The way that she just was dominant over Jordynne Grace in all but one of the angles that led up to the pay-per-view. It was only the go-home show where Grace kind of surprised her and slammed her head into the table. Otherwise, it was Perrazzo dominating Jordynne Grace, who really doesn't get dominated very often in Impact because it's, you know, because of her gimmick. And then to actually go ahead and put the championship on her in her first pay-per-view title match, yeah, they made her. And so I'm very high on her also. I think she's delivering good mic work. I got to say, though, I don't think anyone should be surprised that it didn't work for her in WWE. I don't say this to be mean. I think wrestlers can come in all shapes and sizes, but we know what they're about. And you know, when you look at Deonna, it's just, to me, it's pretty obvious that, yeah, this isn't going to be Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn's thing. And she's been in great shape in the past, and I don't think there's anything wrong with the way she looks now. But I can I'm not surprised that it wasn't what WWE was looking for. They shouldn't care, but clearly they do.
And you can't be mad at someone pointing out the proclivities and biases of Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn. And there's two extremes, you know, of what they want in the women's division. And if you're in the middle, heck, going back to Molly Holly, you get excluded because you're not on one extreme. You're not at one extreme or the other. So yeah, I mean, I like her. I think it should be a fun reign. And I think Impact has done a good job assembling a continued relevant women's division.
I think it's stronger than AEW's.
I do too. Yeah. Yeah. I've said that before. And they, you know, I mean, Impact, it's off the radar. I could imagine being frustrating for the people involved in Impact. But they're the number one show on Access TV. I don't know how much money they get from their international agreements and that kind of thing. But, you know, kind of an owned and operated situation with the best of whoever is discarded from elsewhere. I think the refresh with the new talent, maybe we'll explore this more on the flagship on Thursday, but the refresh with all the new talent coming in has me more interested than I've been in a while, because it doesn't feel like they're, you know, mixing the same, you know, six guys and six women and trying to keep things fresh in a way that was sometimes a stretch.
Yeah, they really needed an influx of talent on the men's side, and they got it, you know, just bringing in EC3, Eric Young, and then Gallows and Anderson. And I'm probably forgetting a couple. Heath, I guess, is there too.
Yeah.
You know, that's big for them because, I mean, their shows, they were being headlined by like Trey against Madman Fulton. And you know, it's like, hey, nothing against those guys. And maybe they can get there at some point. But, you know, it just didn't feel main event. So they would have good shows that just, unless there was a good women's match headlining, they just didn't have a real main event is how it felt, because they lacked star power. So this is what they needed. And as long as they can take, yeah, their castoffs who were beaten down in WWE, but if they can take them and make them feel like stars in their storyline universe, it's the best thing that could have happened to them.
All right, cool. Sean, good to hear you. Any quick closing word you want before we wrap up here?
Yeah, just one quick question I was going to ask about the NXT title match, which they're going with Cross and Lee. I know you can talk more about it on the Flash if you guys want to, but I was really curious where they're going to go, because they're in a kind of a bind, because Keith Lee's done a great job as champion, but Cross is a great new act. It's really over, as far as I can tell. The fans are really enjoying it from what I'm seeing on social media. So, where do you think they're leaning on that? And that's all I had, guys. Appreciate you taking my call real quick. And
cool.
Thanks for everything you guys do.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you catching us on this last-second mailbag caller show. Jason, what do you think?
I don't know, and I love it. Yeah, that's. Yeah. I guess I lean Lee just because he's a new champion, but can I rule out that they're just going to go all the way with Karrion Kross? No. And as down as I've been on WWE Raw and SmackDown, I think they also have a very compelling SummerSlam main event if they choose to make it that, and Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre. I like that the TakeOver show and that match, there really does feel like there's some mystery. There just wasn't any. Or you didn't care. Let's face it. I mean, did anyone care who won the Swamp Fight realistically? No. Did anyone think that Dolph Ziggler was going to beat Drew McIntyre? No. So now, I guess I probably would have been tempted if I were in Paul Levesque's shoes to kind of keep those two apart, maybe, just save that for somewhere down the road. I can also respect that they're not. They're just giving you the big match. They're not sitting on it, and they're going right to it. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I am in the camp of, and we can talk more Thursday on this, I'm not super-duper sold on Karrion Kross yet. Beyond the ring entrance, I thought his in-ring performance on NXT was sort of blah. And I want him to rise to the occasion. I think he was a big fish in a small pond with great potential, and he's been given great production, great ring entrance. It's just, I'm not saying he's bad. I'm not saying he shouldn't get a push, but I'm not seeing breakout star in the charisma he's doing fine with facial expressions. It's just not leaping off the page as this super layered, compelling character. I'm still just not quite sure who he is. And so based on that, I could imagine him getting fed and losing and then sort of moving him to a different spot to rebuild.
Could be. Yeah. I think I'm higher on him than you, but it may be because of the work as Killer Kross and Impact. I was very high on that. It's not going to happen most likely. That fight pit they did, man, I'd like to see him in that. The WrestleMania weekend, that match that he had on the, Josh Barnett's, I can't remember what the heck they call it. It's basically an MMA style shoot fight or something like that. He went in there with Davey Boy Smith Jr. And it's the best Davey Boy Smith Jr. match you'll ever see. It's just, he really thrived in that style. And so I'd actually like to see him incorporate more of that into what he's doing in NXT. But I'm looking for. I mean, it really is a big test for him. Getting in there with Keith Lee, who doesn't have too many disappointing matches, that it should be very interesting to see how Kross does.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, cool. Jason, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you Thursday.
Sounds great, Wade.
Excellent.